E4E is brought to you by the University of Delaware Partnership for Public Education. In an effort to increase the availability and accessibility of UD expertise to Delaware's P12 educators, leaders, and policy influencers, we have invited faculty members from the University of Delaware's 9 colleges to share their research. We hope you enjoy today's critical conversation and consider ways you might be able to leverage relevant research and UD expertise to advance policy and transform practice. Hello, my name is Dr. Anastasia Pernton. I'm the Associate Director of the Partnership for Public Education. I'll be the host for today's episode of the E4E podcast, which was produced by Sarah Daniels, a graduate student in the Biden School of Public Policy and Administration. Today, we catch up with Dr. Jason Husted, an applied child development researcher at the University of Delaware's College of Education and Human Development, and Kara Kelly, a fifth-year PhD candidate in the Department of Human Development and Family Sciences. Jason specializes in early childhood policy and practice. His research focuses on 3 lines of work: research with caregivers and children on parent-child interactions in low-income families, research with children in early care and education providers to investigate outcomes of public early childhood programs and school readiness, and research aimed at understanding the implications of state and federal early childhood policies. Jason also teaches undergraduate and graduate courses on topics such as child and family policy, research methods, and early childhood administration, leadership, and advocacy. Additionally, Jason serves as the research director for the Delaware Institute for Excellence in Early Childhood, DIEEC. Kara's research broadly focuses on understanding whether and how early childhood education programs and policies best promote children's development. Her research primarily focuses on early childhood education quality, including gaining a deeper understanding of how early childhood education quality elements like child-teacher interactions and classroom ratios are related to children's academic and social-emotional development. Kara and Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Great. So, Kara, my first question is, what is Early Head Start?
So first, I'm going to explain what Head Start is. So Head Start is a federally funded program that was established in 1965 for preschool-age children living in poverty. Head Start was originally designed to help break the cycle of intergenerational poverty. In 1994, Early Head Start was authorized to support low-income expectant mothers and children from birth through age 3. Early Head Start offers comprehensive services to parents and caregivers, like home visiting, health screenings, and early care and education. Early Head Start also has policies focused on improving parenting practices for families who live in poverty. Early Head Start services and policies are tailored to the needs of infants and toddlers to promote continued growth and development. For example, many programs offer services that promote positive parenting, including support for parenting skills and parents' knowledge of child development, help for families to move towards self-sufficiency, and individualized family goal planning.
So why did you look specifically at the social-emotional functioning of children involved in Early Head Start?
So we chose to look at social-emotional functioning of children involved in Head Start because young children who live in poverty may be at increased risk for difficulties in social-emotional outcomes, including challenges with self-regulation and mental health. However, Head Start's early learning outcomes framework requires Early Head Start programs to foster children's social-emotional development through high-quality early learning environments. Examples of these types of environments may include planning organized activities that are responsive and individualized to each child's development and learning. Early Head Start in particular seeks to improve social-emotional development both directly and indirectly by buffering the family from stress through connection with support services, promoting positive relationships between parents and children, and directly enhancing children's social-emotional skills like self-control and managing emotions. I think it's also important to note that social-emotional development progresses rapidly from infancy to toddlerhood. So examples of social-emotional skills in infancy may include smiling, seeking attention from others through movement and vocalizations, and exhibiting increased self-awareness. In toddlerhood, social-emotional development may encompass developing self-control, autonomy, and self-regulation. From previous research, we know that attendance in Early Head Start has lasting benefits on children's social-emotional development compared with children who did not attend Early Head Start. Social-emotional competence is an important component of children's school readiness and is crucial for infants and toddlers' short and long-term development.
Jason, based on your study, how can a child's social-emotional functioning be related to their family functioning and stress?
Our study included about 250 families who were participating in an Early Head Start program. That means that they were almost all families experiencing poverty and that they were already receiving many different types of services that early Head Start provides. We were interested in trying to understand family functioning and well-being in that group. Low-income parents with children can face many simultaneous challenges. This isn't just limited to having enough money on a day-to-day basis. It can also include mental health challenges like anxiety or depression, experiences with parenting stress, and perhaps a lack of social support. We found that among these early Head Start families, there were some key differences in their experiences. Our analyses showed that there were three groups of families: a low stress, high family functioning group, which was our largest group, a moderate family stress, low family functioning group, and the third group was a high anxiety or depression group and high parenting stress. The good news is that the average family was doing well while navigating the challenges of poverty and raising a young child. But there were smaller groups of families that were struggling more in terms of stress and family functioning. We also wanted to connect what we were learning about parents to their children's social-emotional functioning. We found that children had the highest levels of social-emotional functioning when parents were in that low-stress, high-functioning group. Unfortunately, children had more problem behaviors and lower levels of social-emotional functioning when their parents were struggling more, with higher rates of stress and higher levels of anxiety and depression. So to put this another way, our findings show that in some ways, infants and toddlers' social-emotional skills were linked with what was going on with their parents in terms of stress, mental health, and family functioning.
Kara, how do parenting behaviors contribute to infant and toddlers' outcomes like social-emotional development?
Since Early Head Start supports positive parenting practices, we were particularly interested in how specific parenting behaviors contribute to infant and toddler outcomes. In our study, we looked at how maternal sensitivity and maternal engagement influence social-emotional development in infants and toddlers. Maternal sensitivity can be thought of as reciprocal interactions between a mother and child, and it involves appropriate reactions by the mother for the time and the situation. Maternal engagement involves being responsive and providing a secure base. These types of interactions have been shown to support positive social-emotional development in young children. In our study, we found that higher levels of maternal sensitivity were linked with higher levels of social competence for infants. Maternal sensitivity was not linked with infants and toddlers' problem behaviors, though. We also did not find any evidence that maternal engagement was linked with children's social-emotional outcomes for this group of children. So this means that specific parenting behaviors like maternal sensitivity may support infants and toddlers' social competence, which is important for programs like Early Head Start that focus on promoting positive parenting practices. For instance, Early Head Start could differentiate their services to match the needs of families they serve.
Could you give an example of what maternal sensitivity looks like in maternal engagement?
Sure. So maternal sensitivity would be when a child's upset in an environment and the mom is responsive to the child's needs. So reacting in a positive way, making sure the child feels comforted and acknowledging the child's feelings. It's appropriate in that situation. Maternal engagement would be being responsive and thinking about attachment theory here, the strained situation where a child and a mom are in a room together and a stranger comes in and it looks at how the child reacts to the mom. And so secure base is the child feels okay with the stranger in the room, but the mom is providing support to let the child know that they're okay with the stranger in the room with them.
Awesome. Thank you. So how are caregiving practices impacted by experiences of poverty, high levels of stress, and maternal education?
So we were really interested in studying how poverty, stress, and maternal education influence caregiving practices, because as Jason mentioned, the families in our study had diverse experiences. In our study, higher levels of maternal education were linked with higher levels of maternal sensitivity and engagement. This means that mothers who had higher levels of education were more sensitive and engaged with their infants and toddlers. However, we did not find evidence that poverty or stress influenced caregiving practices in our sample, but prior work has shown that the dual experiences of poverty and high stress levels may result in less optimal caregiving practices. The lack of findings in our study may be positive, though, because it may suggest that Early Head Start is buffering the effects of poverty and stress in terms of parenting practices.
Jason, how can targeted interventions that focus on increasing positive parent-child interactions contribute to positive outcomes for young children and parents who live in poverty?
So that's a question that can be answered in a variety of different ways. The intervention that I've studied is called Promoting First Relationships, or PFR. It focuses on building on families' existing strengths to promote positive interactions between caregivers and their young children. PFR is supported by research evidence, but there are a lot of other models out there seeking to accomplish similar goals. You can view these programs as curricula that human services staff or educators can follow when working with families. So I think it's worth highlighting that different interventions or curricula have somewhat different approaches or goals. With PFR, the professionals make videos of parents playing together with their children and then excerpt short clips of the video to review in one-on-one conversations with parents. Other interventions might use different approaches, including group training sessions rather than the individual approach. The match between interventions and programs offering them is probably important. There are staff training requirements that come into play and information about families served by the program that will be important. Organizations wanting to carry out a parent-child interaction curriculum should give careful thought to what's possible in their own organization. So what might best meet the needs of their clients? For example, what languages do they speak and what supports do they need? And also, what's feasible for the existing staff who are going to do this work? For example, how long does the training take and does it build on specialized training the staff need to have in advance? Finally, the curriculum should be carried out with fidelity to the curriculum model in order to have the best chance of meeting goals for the program or for the family. Under the right conditions, the hope is that after finishing a parent-child interaction curriculum, the parent will have a more comprehensive toolkit to draw from during the everyday experiences they have with their kids.
So to close every episode, we like to make a connection to Delaware. Now, what do your findings on the impact of family experiences and functioning have on children's social, emotional functioning and skills mean for Delaware policymakers, educators, and families?
A key point that I can't emphasize strongly enough is the importance of starting early. A great deal of our brain development happens very early in life, so these early experiences can have lasting impacts. That includes what happens in the interactions that adults have with their children, and it also includes more general family functioning and the stress that families experience. Parents should keep that in mind, and policymakers should keep that in mind when thinking about how to support families. Another message is that the children in our studies were infants and toddlers, so babies up through about age 3. This is a really young age group, and we're seeing differences in social emotional functioning based on what's going on in their families already. Policymakers and educators have rightly devoted attention to preschool age children, but even younger children, the 0 to 3 crowd, are sometimes overlooked in terms of what's available to their early experiences and develop social emotional skills. Another takeaway message is that a one-size-fits-all approach is likely to miss some kids and families. It may not be an equally good match for all service providers, so we need to make good use of the research evidence at hand to think about what works best for whom.
Well, Jason and Kara, it's been wonderful having you on the E4E podcast today. Before we finish, is there anything else you'd like to share?
One more thing that I would say is that early Head Start is an especially good context to be looking at issues like social emotional skill development in children. And it's something that you can work on in the context of a bunch of other services that are also provided in a program like Early Head Start. And I'd also add that one of the places where I do work at the University of Delaware is the Delaware Institute for Excellence in Early Childhood, which provides a variety of supports specifically to professionals in early childhood about the work that they do with young children in Delaware and beyond.
Awesome. Jason and Kara, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate having you. We will have all of your information and the articles that were used to inform this episode, as well as links to DIEEC available in the more information box about this episode. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of E4E, brought to you by the University of Delaware Partnership for Public Education. For more information about the work being done by the Partnership for Public Education, please visit our website at www.udel.edu/ppe.